House come to order if members can take their seats.
This budget is a huge job maker, and the number one solution to economic insecurity is a job.
Hungry children can't learn, and it's our responsibility to try to help.
Equality and opportunity.
I believe most people are here because they want to do some good.
Welcome to Capital Ideas. It's the podcast where members of the majority Democrats in the Washington State House of Representatives sit down at the Capitol and talk about ideas. If you've been waiting patiently or impatiently since last spring for the annual post-session debrief featuring Speaker of the House Laurie Jenkins, your wait is over. Some of the ideas Speaker Jenkins touches on are affordability, protecting Washingtonians from the abuses of the federal government, public safety, health care, tax reform, and those are just a few. Stick around to be enlightened. We recorded this conversation in Tacoma, Washington on Thursday, April 2nd, 2026, and this is the whole thing. Welcome back to Capital Ideas, Speaker Laurie Jenkins. It's time for our annual post-session conversation. I look forward to this every year, and I think today's going to be terrific. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, Dan. Thanks. Thanks for coming to my house to do this one.
I love coming up to Tacoma. It's one of my favorite cities in the world.
As it should be.
Let me get you to start with just kind of a session overview. Kind of how does it look from 5,000 or 6,000 feet? Given what you had in mind at the beginning and given what came to fruition by the last day of the session.
Yeah, you know, I think our goals for session were kept really consistent throughout session. First big goal was to make sure that we protected Washingtonians from basically the malevolence of the federal government right now and how much it was doing to harm Washingtonians. Second, and kind of related to that, were the affordabilities that kicked in, affordability issues that kicked in as a result of things the federal government did. Third was really some budget sustainability work, both in the transportation area and in the operating budget, which we were able, I think, to make some real advancement on, in large part due to passing the millionaire's tax. And the millionaire's tax also will have a significant impact on affordability for Washingtonians. So that's how we started, that's how we ended, and we kept that focus throughout session.
You know, it's easier to look back and say, well, we didn't get this done, we didn't get that done, but there were a heck of a lot of successful efforts this session, not only on these priorities, but on other bills as well.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we were able to prohibit law enforcement from wearing masks to hide their identity, which we know that ICE agents have been doing. Washington law enforcement officers have not particularly been doing that. And we actually heard from a number of them that they thought it was hurting their relationship with the community to allow masked people who claiming to be law enforcement engaging with the public. Related to that, but a different bill, we also passed a bill prohibiting people from representing themselves as being law enforcement when they aren't. And again, when you have people masked, that makes it even harder for someone to be able to tell, is this real law enforcement or not? But we had, again, reports related to ICE of people going around in vehicles or dressing as in masks and dark clothing, claiming to be ICE agents that were not in fact doing that, and really petrifying folks frequently in around schools, around daycares, around healthcare institutions. So we passed that one. We also created some real guardrails for automatic license plate readers, also known as flock cameras. We passed the Immigrant Worker Protection Act, which really strengthens protections for all workers, but primarily for immigrant workers. It requires that employers, when they have notice that someone from the federal government is coming to their work site, they need to let their workforce know as much in advance as they can do that. And then another thing that we did was to equalize the way all law enforcement officers in Washington State, the requirements for being a certified law enforcement officer, the standards that people are going to be held to. And if you're decertified as a law enforcement officer, it doesn't matter. If you're the street, you know, the street officer who's out there walking a beat, or you're a police chief, or even an elected sheriff, if you get decertified, then you are not going to be able to be a law enforcement officer in Washington State, and that means across the board.
It makes perfect sense. It's you're giving people a whole lot of power, and they may as well be trained.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, law enforcement officers are the only people that can arrest someone, can put them in handcuffs, can take them to jail and hold them. So their police powers are large, very large, larger than anyone else's. And just making sure that we have really consistent standards across all law enforcement officers in the state, I think was a real step forward. And again, another one of those steps to build trust between community and law enforcement.
You mentioned the millionaire's tax, and I'm going to want to devote at least a couple of minutes to that. But that kind of makes me want to jump back to the supplemental operating budget, which my understanding is it's not going to be affected by that millionaire's tax until, I think, 2029.
Correct.
So in the meantime, this was a tough budget year, but I think overall people felt like they kind of pulled it out of the fire.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it really helped. We first, toward the, you know, the last 3 weeks of session, we got news that our maintenance level budget, meaning the kind of the baseline budget of things that you need to fund, like, for example, K-12 education, you got to fund it at its baseline level, that those costs were going up. But then a few days later, we also got news that our revenues were also increasing. So that helped us not have to do the most severe reductions that we thought we might have to do, and helped us move forward. So that, I think I shouldn't speak for everybody. I'm always happy that we're able to deliver the services to Washingtonians that they want us to deliver, that they expect state government to deliver. And I always feel very lucky and supported about the productivity of Washington's workforce. And that's one of the things, the great businesses that we have, that's one of the things that helps us be able to fund all these services. Again, we'll talk about the millionaire's tax later, but you know, we have rather consistently built our tax base on the backs of the poorest and working people in Washington State, and the millionaire's tax let us really start to rebalance our tax code so that we get closer to kind of everybody paying a similar percentage of their income.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about that millionaire's tax now.
Yeah.
First question is, are you rested up yet from that 25-hour debate?
Yeah, well, that's not my best skill. Resting up has never been my best skill. But I feel energized. I would say I didn't feel particularly worn out after we passed it. Nor did I feel worn out during the remainder of the session. Nor did my wife pointed out to me, you don't seem like you feel that worn out when session ended. So I tend to be very, very happy and see the glass is always half full in terms of the things that we have done. But I also am quite cognizant of the half empty part of the glass. And so I tend to move rather quickly into what are we going to work on next. But I was so proud of debate that we engaged in for the people of the state. It was a big, big policy shift. And I was particularly proud of my caucus and the way they went through all of we had 81 amendments filed and eventually around 75 of them debated, and a full debate on every single one of them. And both the Republicans and the Democrats fully participated, but I live more in the Democratic caucus while we're doing that. And so proud of my caucus for the work they did to go through them all and stick together and bring this to the people of the state.
And there's no possible way that a person could have looked at that and said, gee, the Republicans got censored or stifled.
Yeah.
They had a whole lot more time than the Democrats did.
Yeah, you know, but, you know, I would say, Dan, one of the things that can get very frustrating on the floor is when arguments and amendments are super redundant, and you just get speech after speech that says the same thing, or amendment after amendment that's just like a small, like a comma change or a two-word change that's not substantive, and then it's done in different ways over and over again. That's not a substantive debate. And that's the thing that gets very, very frustrating, because that's obvious that it's done for filibustering purposes. And we have a rule that allows us to stop debate if it is filibustering. Even though the chair of the Republican Party, who's also a member of the House of Representatives, acknowledged in a video that he produced that they were trying to filibuster, we felt like it was important not to try to stop the debate. And I didn't find their debate that filibustering in the way I've described.
I want to talk about you for a minute now. When you were just Representative Laurie Jenkins, there were ways that you could experience fulfillment in that role, particularly doing things that affected your district as well as the state. In committee leadership, it kind of gives you a bigger umbrella in which to feel fulfilled or not. And as Speaker, it seems like you've got the largest umbrella, for want of a better word, under which everybody's bills really are your bills too. How's that feel?
Well, you know, it's a mixed bag, Dan, because, you know, for me, like, I was the prime sponsor of the Washington CARES Act, which when it passed, it was known as the Long-Term Care Trust, and voters approved it 2 years ago on the ballot. So that was, you know, great to see. But to be the prime sponsor and to work as the prime sponsor on getting that across the finish line, I had been the prime sponsor of the capital gains excise tax bill every year. So I was the first one to file it. And the year after I became speaker was the year that it passed. And I was the speaker no longer prime sponsors bills. So, right, that can be sometimes hard to see that. Likewise, when I was chair of the Civil Rights and Judiciary Committee, those were watershed years for us addressing gun violence. And we're still doing that today. So sometimes I'm kind of sad that I'm not sponsoring bills. And I certainly, when I go out in my district and give a end of session presentation, I never have a list of bills that I prime sponsored this one and it passed and this one and this one, and here's what I'm going to be working on next year. But the other side of the coin, you kind of summarized it. Like, every bill is my bill. I get a chance to work on so many bills, because not by the time a bill gets to the Rules Committee that I chair and that we're moving it off the floor, especially many of our more significant bills, but even some that might seem smaller, have real challenges with them, either a partisan challenge or some other kind of challenge. And I'm able to work on, to help the prime sponsor work on them, figure out how to move them across the floor. And that comes with its own real kind of pride and value. And it's one of the things I love doing the most. It's just that most of my work is really behind the scenes doing that. And I do kind of like that too. So it's a balance. I have plenty of opportunities to feel sorry for myself if I want to, and plenty of opportunities to feel great pride and joy in the work that I do. And it's a lot about how, on any particular day, how I decide to engage with the world.
Well, I was going to ask you about what was the most fulfilling moment, but I think we covered that. Mm. And so I will ask you to point to a moment, if possible, that you experienced in the last 2 years that you could only have experienced as Speaker of the House.
Oh, wow. What a good question. I think, you know, most typically those moments have been, since I've been Speaker, when I'm meeting with Senate leadership and House leadership, the majority leader and myself, to try and create a path for bills that we have decided are very important for us. And then when we bring the governor in to that also, that is really a leadership conversation. And there's a lot of push and pull in those conversations. And having, you know, Jamie Peterson is the majority leader. He's somebody that I've known and worked with for 30 years. And it's been a real joy to have, to be working with somebody who really just kind of tells it like it is for me. He could tell me things that would make me feel better, but wouldn't really be the truth and wouldn't help move a bill forward. And he always tells me the truth from his perspective about what the problem might be, what he thinks we might need to do, even if it's hard for me to hear. And that's the kind of engagement that's really important to have in the legislature so that you can build on trust between members. The worst thing is when somebody tells you everything's fine, the bill looks great, and then they vote no on the bill or something, you know, and that you're like, what happened? So that's definitely something. I will say one thing about my greatest joy. I mean, obviously passing the millionaire's tax was a, you know, I think an incredible watershed moment, and we still have more work to do on that. But for me, having 75 amendments that we debated and having the chair of the Finance Committee, the majority leader, and I sit in a room, go through each of the amendments, decide what we were going to recommend to caucus in terms of accepting some and rejecting others. My caucus stuck together and accepted every single amendment we recommended accepting and rejected every amendment we recommended rejecting. It doesn't mean that every member of the caucus voted that way, but the majority of the caucus did. And that made me very proud to see the cohesiveness of my caucus on that issue, and particularly on these issues related to protecting Washingtonians from the overreach of the federal government and affordability this year. We really were very, very aligned and cohesive on those topics. And that's something that gives a speaker great, great pride.
As many successes as there were this year, in any session, there's going to be outright failures, but there's also going to be things that, you know, they're on the right track. They didn't quite get there to the station. Have you got a couple that you feel are going to be on this list of priorities at the beginning of the 2027 session?
Yeah, I think there's a few that are, and there's probably more out there, but a few spring to mind that are specific bills that I think will continue to be worked on. And then just some general topics. First of all, we were able to move forward and move the caucus forward on doing some work around juvenile rehabilitation and the facilities that our young people are held in, which are not helping them rehabilitate at this point. We didn't get that across the floor of the House, but we had more support for that this session than we did last session. I think that work will continue. Likewise, leading into the broader topic about healthcare, we had a bill on medical debt, which is something that I worked on a lot before I became speaker. We weren't able to get it across the finish line, but I think we really need to work on medical debt for Washingtonians. And then more broadly, the worst that's coming in the healthcare realm hasn't actually arrived yet. That will arrive later this year. And we are really going to need to spend our energy over the interim figuring out how do we help Washingtonians continue to have access to healthcare through insurance and things like that. And then that leads into the next topic, which I think is a big one, will be a big one for us next year, which is jobs. You know, having a jobs package writ large. I'll talk about healthcare for just a second and then some other areas, but one of the challenges is if you have health insurance, but it still takes you 3 months to see your healthcare provider because of shortages of facilities and providers, that's not really access to care. So we have to really work on making sure that we have providers in community to provide care and have facilities, the right facilities to provide that. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the things that the Trump administration has done, our ports are, they're not shut down, but they're working at a third or less of the capacity that they have because of the tariffs and things like that. We've also heard from our building and construction trades how many of their work members of their workforce are just sitting waiting to get a call to work on something. We can't have that. These are just highly skilled workers, and we have so much work to be done in the transportation and in the capital budget realms in particular. So I'm very committed to us working on a jobs package this next session that's pretty robust in a lot of different areas to see what we can do to help folks, as again, the federal administration is kind of attacking people's incomes, attacking people's safety. We got to do the things that we can do to help undergird people and support them.
Would this involve post-secondary education bills as well?
Sure. Right. A lot in the, in fact, I just had a call from the chair of that committee, Dave Paul. He said to me, how do you think we should best be involved in this committee should best be involved in the jobs package? He and I are playing phone tag and we'll talk some about that. We'll talk with the building and construction trades. We'll be open to talking to a lot of folks about how to design a package that will make a difference for people. I think a lot of what we have to do, though, is make sure that our transportation budgets are working, that we're doing maintenance and operations and build so that people can be hired to do that work. Likewise, in our capital budget area, those are the two biggest places where Washington state government has a big impact on jobs. You know, my seatmate, Jake Fye, is chair of that committee. One of our biggest challenges there is 2018 was the highest gas tax year in the state of Washington. It has continued to decrease since then. And that is for a good reason. We have this all over the place. There are good things that are happening, right? There's much higher EV use, much less use of gasoline, which has a great impact on climate change in this state. But we don't have a structure that has those EVs paying into road maintenance and construction in a good sort of way. So that is something that Sheriff Fye has been working on. And I expect we'll see something on that this next session in a big way. I'm kind of loath to mention gas right now because
It costs a pretty penny at the moment, and
what the federal government is doing there is just extraordinarily harmful to everyone all over the United States.
Speaker Jenkins, we have been here quite a while. I think we've covered all the topics I came in here with really well, and I want to give you a chance to kind of close this out before we shut this down until next January.
Thank you, Dan. Well, I would just say that the podcast may be shut down till next January, right? And part of this is because everyone in the House moves into an election year. And so starting very soon, folks won't see stuff from our legislative offices or any things like that until after Election Day. But I would say I think members of the House are still working really hard, as will I, on all kinds of issues that constituents bring to me. Again, even though I don't prime sponsor bills, when constituents bring a good idea to me, I find the right sponsor for a bill. And then I watch it, take care of it throughout session. So I mostly want to say to my constituents and to other people in the state who have a good idea, reach out to me, reach out to the member of the legislature who represents you. Now is a time to sit down and talk with them about your ideas, about questions you've had about what happened last session, and already we'll be in the throes of preparing for next session.
This is the podcast I look forward to most every year, and once again, it's been a pleasure. I also want to put in a plug for the fact that during the legislative session, you do a completely separate podcast called The Speaker's Scoop. And if people have not heard that, it's available on the House Democratic Caucus website, just like Capital Ideas is. And people should check that out if they want more Speaker Laurie Jenkins in their ears.
I don't know if they'll want that, but I will say the Speaker's Scoop is more just me riffing on whatever's going on a particular week. So it's pretty in the moment. And I really appreciate the work you do to help me do that and this, Dan.
It's my pleasure, and I mean that sincerely. That's Speaker of the House Laurie Jenkins, and that's Capital Ideas for today. If you're a subscriber, that's terrific, and if not, it's easy. Just look for Capital Ideas, and that's capital with an O, on your favorite podcast site, or visit the House Democratic Caucus website at housedemocrats.wa.gov and hit the media button at the top. You'll find this and scores of other episodes, and you can also subscribe to the Speaker's Scoop while you're at it. This is your state government, and what happens here matters more now than at any time in the entire 137-year history of the Evergreen State. I'm Dan Frizzell for the Washington State House Democrats, putting people first since 1889. Thanks for your time.